Christmas is approaching. And once again, we are in the silly season for pretending that actually Christmas has no religious significance. A survey showed that only 1 in 10 Advent calendars has any religious content whatsoever. Only a third of schools now have a traditional nativity play. And if you trawl the interweb, you'll be able to find plenty of sites that argue that Jesus is not the reason for this season. And I guess it does seem that so much that's associated with Christmas actually bears that out. Trees, decorations, lights, presents, parties. For most people, those are the things that make up Christmas. And for most people, they have absolutely nothing to do with celebrating Jesus' birth. And I guess that for us as Christians, that can also be the case. We know that Christmas is about celebrating Jesus' birth, but we kind of go for all of the trappings of that, and just almost there's a complete disconnect. Yeah, we love the trees and the decorations and the tinsel and all that stuff, but it's kind of disconnected from what Christmas is really about. But actually, I think that a lot of these trappings of the modern Christmas can actually point us to Jesus. So for the next two Sunday evenings, today and next week, I want us to reclaim Christmas, to see how all of it can actually help to show its real meaning. And hopefully as we do that, it will help us to celebrate more thoughtfully, and hopefully it will mean that's all that stuff that goes to make up Christmas might actually start to actually prompt our thinking about Jesus. Hopefully it will help us as well to talk with others about what Christmas really means. So tonight, we're going to begin with what for many people has to be the star turn in their Christmas decorations. The tree and the lights. And for a kind of way into that, we're going to turn to a well-known Christmas passage from the Bible, John 1, 1 to 14. And Sheila's going to come and read for us.
John 1, 1 to 14. The Word became flesh. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light, he came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. This is the word of the Lord.
So, trees and lights. I guess the reference to light was pretty clear there. But what about trees? I admit that it might all be rather obscure. But I think here there is something that points to trees, or at least that points to one particular tree. John writes of Jesus that though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. When John says that he came to that which was his own, of course he could have been referring to the whole of creation, but most likely I think he's referring to the Jewish nation, his own people. Jesus came to his own people, God's chosen people, and they wouldn't receive him. As you go through the Gospels, you find that for much of his ministry, many people did receive Jesus. Even though the religious establishment rejected him, the crowds flocked to him. It's only towards the end that you find everyone turning against him. Jesus rides into Jerusalem and is hailed as king, but it soon becomes apparent that he's not the king the people want him to be. He goes to Gethsemane to pray, and when the authorities come to arrest him, even his disciples desert him. Finally, even Peter denies knowing him, and Jesus is left alone. And from there, he goes to the cross. That is the point at which ultimately his own refused to receive him. So even though it might be obscure, I think that right at the start of John's Gospel, as he talks about Jesus coming into the world, there is a hint of what that would lead to. The tree on which Jesus would die. But to make sense of that brings in two further trees. Because it isn't just Christmas, but actually the whole of human history that is summed up not by one, but by three trees. The first comes right at the beginning, Genesis chapter 2. When God's work of creation was completed, he placed Adam in the Garden of Eden, and in the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God tells Adam, "You're free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die." But of course, Adam did eat from it. And even though he didn't die immediately, physically, in another more significant way, he did die. His relationship with God was broken. He became mortal. His body began to age. He was on the path to death. The tree at the beginning of the Bible sums up the human dilemma. Alienated from God, determined to be our own God, and with no ultimate hope. The third tree comes at the other end of the Bible. In the book of Revelation, we have John's great vision of God's ultimate purpose for his creation. So in Revelation 22, "Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb, down the middle of the great street of the city. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be any curse." The fruit from the tree in Eden became a curse. The fruit of this tree will reverse that. No longer will there be any curse. But how can we get from that first tree in Eden, where all of us as descendants of Adam became alienated from God and alienated from hope, to the third tree in the New Jerusalem, where we will see God face to face? Though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. It's only through Jesus' death on the tree that we can move from living under the curse which the first tree brought and into the hope which the third tree gives. So the tree is actually a very appropriate part of Christmas, even if the vast majority of people, including most Christians, never see it in that light. In fact, your Christmas tree can help you ponder the real meaning of Christmas. And it can help you to ponder where you sit in that great story. So tonight, how much does the first tree still have its hold on your life? What sins do you struggle to let go of? Is your life marked by distance from God? Are you still more interested in going your way than His way? How much does the third tree shape your life and your actions? Are you living, looking forwards to that hope? The pains and joys of this life lighten because of the hope that you have? How much does the middle tree dominate your life? Are you daily thankful for all that God has done for you through it? Are you living a cross-shaped life? Denying yourself, taking up your cross, and following Jesus? Of course, your Christmas tree won't sit there just as it is. Once the tree is up, there will be all sorts of decorations to go on it, not least the lights. And not just on the tree. Many homes will have lights around the house, lights outside the house, lights everywhere. And if I'm now reading from John 1, finding the tree was a bit obscure, finding the light is anything but obscure. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. Jesus is the light of the world. It's one of the great I am sayings he used to himself. John 8 verse 12, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." And again, it's a theme that weaves through the Bible. God's first act in creation was to say, "Let there be light." And there was light. After the Exodus, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light. In the tent of meeting, and then in the temple, the lamp was kept burning all the time, symbolizing God's presence with his people. So when Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," he was making a very profound statement about being God. And as with the tree, light is one of the key features at the end of the Bible. Revelation 22, having spoken about the tree in the New Jerusalem, goes on, "The throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. There will be no more night. They will not need the light of a lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord God will give them light." So celebrating the birth of Jesus with lights seems to me to be very appropriate. They can be a reminder that Jesus is the light of the world, that in him we see God perfectly revealed. And especially for us who in this part of the world celebrate Christmas in deep winter, when all around is dark, they remind us that Jesus is light shining in the darkness. So your Christmas lights can help you remember who Jesus is, God incarnate. But the lights also help you to think about your relationship with him, because this is still a dark world. And the darkness is not just around us, but sometimes it's inside us. John 3:19 put it very clearly. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. So if the lights remind us about Jesus, they also ask us how much of our lives are actually spent in the light. Are there areas of your life which are still really in darkness? Where you don't really want the light of Jesus to shine because it would be uncomfortable and might mean that we have to make a change? He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. And so this Advent and Christmas, as you put up your tree and switch on your lights, I guess you could just enjoy them for what they are. But maybe this Christmas there'll be that opportunity to allow God to speak into your life. And that opportunity to look at your own life and ask, how much is your life shaped by the tree and by the light?